Welcome to Home Ground. I'm Brian Kahn. It's an odd human truth that we often pay the least attention to, and thus know almost nothing about, some of the most common things in our lives. Take commercial trucks. We typically experience them on the highway, huge, intimidating, driving faster or slower than we would like. Our response is emotional. We just wish they'd get the hell out of the way. We don't stop to think that without those big rigs, our lives would be very different. Ray Kuntz does stop to think. Since 1979, he's been involved in the trucking industry, and for a good period of time, was the chairman and CEO of Watkins Shepherd Trucking Company. He also served as chairman of the American Trucking Association. Ray, many thanks for joining us on Home Ground.
Yeah, thanks for asking me.
Where were you born? What'd your folks do?
I grew up in a small farm in Belleville, North Dakota, one of 11 children.
Wow.
We did it all. We raised grain, hay, milk cows, raised pigs, butchered pigs, cut up meat, you name it. We did about anything we could to survive. And the beautiful thing about it all is my parents had an eighth grade education, and 10 of 11 kids graduated from college. So they set a higher standard for us than...
I was going to ask you what you learned from your folks, and that sounds like that one was setting a high standard.
Education, you know, they believed in it even though they never got to do it themselves. So it was a beautiful thing.
And high school, same area?
High school, and then I came out to go to school at Carroll College here in Helena, and I've never left. It's a great place to live and raise a family and spend a lot of time.
When did you go to Carroll?
Graduated in 1977. Majored in math and economics.
And then what did you do?
I worked my way through Carroll selling carpet and furniture because I didn't have any money growing up on this farm. And
sure.
And that became a bigger thing than school. I always said I was getting my master's in business while I was going to school at Carroll. And then I opened up my own retail store, The Floor Show. And that was right about the time that freight was being deregulated. In fact, it was kind of ironic because my junior year in college, I wrote a paper on why the trucking industry should be deregulated without any idea that I would end up spending my life in it. And so then I started my own store, was paying way too much for freight. Mm-hmm. So I began to dig into that and started coming up ways to move freight a lot cheaper with right deregulation happening. So that just kept growing. You know, we started California and Georgia to Montana, and then added Washington, Oregon, and then after we started doing a lot of carpet deliveries, a lot of the stores that we sold carpet also sold furniture. And I had some of those guys say, you know, you need to look at our furniture shipping because that's costing a lot of money and slow and a lot of damage and all of those things. And in fact, a gentleman, I'm forgetting his name, Valley Furniture in Havre, called me once and said, you're coming to lunch with me in Havre. And I said, why? And he said, because I've got all my freight bills laid out here and I'm convinced that if you look at them, you can figure out a better way. So I drove to Havre, and that began the beginning of our furniture shipping business. And since then, you know, Watkins Shepherd, we grew to be the second largest distributor of carpet in the United States from Georgia, and we're the largest furniture carrier in the United States right now. So
really,
out of those two things.
Helena-based business still, or did you move to Georgia?
No, that's the beautiful part of this. Everything's been done out of Helena. We have a host of people doing pricing and customer service and all of these things right here in Helena. And nobody knows it's dealing with them because of the way IT and phones are.
Sure.
They take these calls. We've got our rating. Our rating happens here. A lot of our billing, you know, you scan it in and people in Helena are keep punching it in. It's really a pretty good industry for Helena, Montana. And very hardly any of what we haul is in Montana, probably less than 2 or 3%. The rest of it is all over the country. You know, we got a nice employee base here servicing the whole country in an industry that not one piece of it is made in Montana.
When I hear that story, one word comes to mind: innovation. You saw a situation, and you said it was expensive, and you looked for ways to reduce costs.
Yeah, well, I think the best thing I did is major in math and economics, and so I don't remember anything from my math books. If you open up a differential equation book, I'd be lost on page one and lost all the way through the last page today. But what it did is it taught me how to solve problems. And the basic simple thing with math is that you line up all your facts and you work your way through a solution. And so, you know, I've always been a fact finder, and I try to find, you know, what are the issues, what are the problems. And I tell my salespeople, we're not here to sell our product, we're here to solve a freight problem. And if we do that better than a competitor, guess what? We get to haul the freight. And so that's been kind of the basis of how we build our company.
When you say build the company, how many trucks have you eventually, if that's the way you measure it, the number of trucks?
We sold out this summer to Schneider Transportation, which is the largest private transportation company in the world, $4 billion company. But before we did, we had 1,300 of our own trucks, 1,300 employees, and of those, 250 of them were based in Montana, even though just a small percentage of our freight was coming in and out of Montana. Although that freight is important to us because it allows a lot of drivers that live here to get back home.
In preparation for this interview, I did a little research, and I was amazed at what I found, and I want to cite a couple of statistics and then ask you about the business in terms of starting with the truckers. Forgive me if I read this. Over 80% of all the communities in the United States rely exclusively on trucks to deliver all of their fuel, clothing, medicine, and other consumer goods. 92% of lumber, 83% of agricultural products, just as examples, 4% of crude oil and petroleum products. And in total, if you look at the commercial freight activity in the United States by mode of transportation, trucks ship 70% of value and 60% of tonnage. That blew me away. I would have thought railroads were much more. Railroads, the comparable figures are 3% of value and 10% of tonnage. That's a lot of trucks and a lot of work.
Well, that's pretty easy to understand, though. I mean, look where your rails are. You have very limited amount of rail service, and you got a lot of highways. And you know, just look in Montana, how few cities are served by rail. Mm-hmm. And even those that are, like intermodal, which is putting a truck or a trailer on a railroad.
Right.
You see them going by all the time, but guess what? They never stop in Montana because we don't have big enough population for them to make that to make sense. So they drive through our state, but they don't stop here. So Montana is really pretty much dependent on trucking for 90% of its economy. I don't have the exact figures, but it's a lot higher than most states because the railroad doesn't stop here, only for boxcars.
When you said intermodal, do you mean that those, I hadn't thought about it, those are packed trailers. When they take them off, they put a...
Truck picks them up and delivers it. So they, you know, they might take it from Chicago to Seattle, and then in Seattle you pick it up and deliver it. But none of them stop in Montana. So our economy is really dependent on trucks, and even more importantly, truck drivers. People forget about all the time that these trucks don't magically go down the road, you know.
Let's talk about the truck drivers. I've been reading about that. Regulation going back to 1938, limiting the amount of time truck drivers can drive because obviously they're a danger to themselves and others. You have some experience with that.
If you look at our country compared to other countries, when I was in Brazil, I got asked to speak at a safety conference in Brazil, and their fatalities are almost many multiples higher than ours. But they don't have any regulations at all. I mean, they can drive as much as they want. They can haul as heavy a weight as they want, so they have a lot more accidents. So the regulations are an important part of our industry. The problem is that our regulators always try to over-regulate and get involved in things that make no sense. You know,
like what?
Right now, they're in big cities, the frustrating thing is moving in and out of traffic. And if you're going to work in the morning in rush hour and 405 in Seattle, if you've ever driven it, you don't want the highway filled up with trucks and you don't want it there at night. But a lot of them get forced. So they're forcing longer meal breaks because they think everyone should have an hour meal break. So there is no parking place at McDonald's to take your semi and truck in and have a meal break. It's completely impractical. And most of those drivers have a sandwich with them and they work all day and they try to get out of that traffic and drive around traffic. And so what are the regulators doing with this? They're forcing a meal break in some states, pushing the drivers to drive in traffic. They do things that don't make sense all the time.
You're listening to Home Ground, and I'm Brian Kahn. We're talking with Ray Koons, longtime chairman and CEO of the Watkins Shepherd Trucking Company and former chairman of the American Trucking Association. You mentioned the safety difference in Brazil and the United States. Have you personally, either in your capacity with Watkins Shepherd or in the Trucking Association, been involved in this safety question? Because it's multifaceted, obviously.
Yeah, when I was chairman of the American Trucking Association, I was proud to bring together two task forces, one on a safety task force and a sustainability task force. And the sustainability task force was all about burning less fuel and putting less carbon in the air, because we did not want to be carbon regulated with carbon taxes. We thought we'd get our industry together and come up with ways to cut down carbon without that. And we did that. We came up with a variety of issues that very few have become law because the lawmakers don't want to make the tough choices. But we also brought a safety task force together, spend several days with industry safety specialists and come up with what can we do to reduce fatalities on our highway and injuries. And you know, one of the top things that's easy, low-hanging fruit that this state still doesn't have is primary enforcement seatbelt laws in every state. I think we have 33 with them, and every time you pass one, the seatbelt usage goes up and a lot less fatalities and very expensive injuries, especially head injuries. And so it just makes sense to do some of these things.
Let's take those one at a time. First, let's go back to the fuel. You said the politicians don't want to take the tough choices. It sounds like if you guys came up with something that works for you and meets a serious reduction of carbon, or I was reading there was some sulfur emission reductions that were very, very serious, why the opposition to it?
The number one thing on the sustainability task force that you could start tomorrow and dramatically cut down the amount of carbon we put out as a country, and whether you believe in global warming or not, you know, I always say, why take the risk? If you can look your grandkids in the eye and say, I can guarantee you that global warming doesn't exist and it's not an issue, then you can go ahead and say that. But if we can't look your grandkids in the eye and say it, then why not be smart and cut carbon? So if you want to cut carbon out, you go to a national 65-mile-an-hour speed limit, and you dramatically cut carbon because everyone burns less fuel. And, I mean, why doesn't that get considered? Nobody wants to pass a bill that will be unpopular. Cause
now, you're not just talking trucks. You're talking cars.
Every vehicle. That's exactly right. You go, national 65-mile-an-hour speed limit, something we could do tomorrow, dramatically reduce carbon. And there's a whole host of other things, you know. We've got a lot of crowded highways that causes stop and go driving,
right,
and that
sure
puts out a huge amount of carbon. So we haven't done anything in recent time when it comes to really highway spending. We got bridges that are falling apart. We got highways that are too crowded, and we do all kinds of other things, and we run away from financing our highways. We haven't raised fuel taxes since 91 or 2, and we have falling apart highways, and we've got pledges that we aren't going to raise taxes. So the cost of highways is more than double in that time, and we're still trying to keep them up with the same amount of money.
And you're saying that the traffic problem is largely a product of that funding cycle.
That's right, because we haven't kept up with the highway use with our highways. And so where you stop and go traffic burns a tremendous amount of fuel and puts out a huge amount of carbon.
Let's go to the seatbelts. Now, when you're talking primary seatbelt law, I think you called it, primary, that means that police can stop and enforce for a lack of seatbelt.
Yeah, we have a secondary law, which,
okay,
which it's against the law not to wear your seatbelt, but you can't get a ticket for it unless they stop you for something else. States that pass primary can, with the binoculars, see you don't have them, give you a $100 or $200 ticket, and usage goes up dramatically. Every state that's passed, fatalities drop, and also injuries. And it's injuries is all, the fatalities are bad. You know, of our 228 fatalities, 170 some of them in Montana last year were due to lack of seatbelt use.
Mm-hmm.
So 70% of Montanans wear seatbelts, and 70% of people are dying from the 30 that don't wear it.
Both the examples you gave affect regular traffic as well as trucks. Does trucker safety particularly, does that have some special importance to you? And if so, what's been your role in it?
No, it's hugely important because accidents are incredibly expensive. They tear apart your company when you have a fatality, whether it's one of your own employees or a fellow highway user. You know, the hardest thing I've done as a CEO is with the amount of miles we drive, we're supposed to have 2 fatalities a year in our system by stats. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, we haven't had that many. which I'm proud of, but we have had them. And what our company has had accidents with fatalities. And when that happens, what I do is I find out who the family is that's involved, whether it was their fault or ours, and I call and apologize for our whole company. And if you want to make a tough phone call, make that one sometime. And if you've made several of them, you start to care about speed limits and rollovers and accidents that can be prevented and fatalities that can be prevented, so easily prevented. And then the cost of these injuries, you know, a head injury and a rollover, which almost all of them result in a head injury or a fatality, incredibly expensive.
Specifically relating to trucker safety, you said you formed, as chairman of the American Trucking Association, a safety task force. What did it come up with?
Came up with a lot of things, Brian. You know, one of the big issues is just teaching your drivers to drive right, not be aggressive. So having a culture in your company that is focused on safety is that's probably one of the most important things you can do. Hmm. But in addition to that, technologies in trucks that reduce accidents, anti-rollover gear in trucks, that's becoming law. Automatic stopping and braking, and you know, a lot of our trucks, you know, get warnings if someone's now in your blind spot so you don't turn into it and push them off the road. So a lot of it was technology based, and a lot of that's become law. And so there have been a lot done, and fatalities have dropped pretty much constantly in trucking for a long time. But you know, last couple of years we got some states raising truck speed limits, and guess what's raising with it? Truck-related fatalities.
Wasn't there a proposal in Montana in the last legislature to raise the speed limit? I don't know if it was for trucks or everybody.
Yeah, Senator Sales out of Bozeman wanted to raise truck speeds to 80 miles an hour, which would have been an absolute disaster. And it's simple physics. When you take a 45,000-pound trailer and you raise the speed, you're going to roll over that much more often. All it takes is a sharp corner at that speed, and it'll roll you over. So and the other thing, the faster you go, the longer it takes to stop. So I always say, if you're driving in front of a truck and a deer jumps out in front of you, the deer is not your problem. It's a truck that's going to run you over, because it takes about three times as long to stop. The faster you raise that truck speed, the longer it takes that truck to stop. And so you get a lot more rear-end accidents. You got a lot more rollovers. Any safety sensitive company has their trucks governed around 65 miles an hour, and even if the senator would have been successful in raising his rates, the safe companies wouldn't have drove 85 anyway.
You're listening to Home Ground, and I'm Brian Kahn. We're talking with Ray Kuntz, longtime chairman and CEO of Watkins Shepherd Trucking Company, and also formerly chairman of the American Trucking Association. One of the things I was surprised to read was that there was a big turnover coming with age, a lot of older men retiring as truck drivers, and a pending shortage. Is that accurate?
Yeah, there's a huge pending driver shortage, and we're in a driver shortage now. And so there's a lot of turnover truck drivers and a lot of recruitment efforts to take them from one trucking company to the other. And it's only going to get worse, because we got a large amount of drivers that are 55 to 65 years old that are going to be retiring.
How's the pay?
You know, the pay keeps getting better. We've had several increases the last 3 years. Probably could even go better yet.
What's better?
Our average drivers with benefits is making close to $60,000 a year. And that sounds good to a lot of people. But, you know, they're on the road. They're away from home a lot. And so it's a tough job. And it doesn't attract. You know, not everyone is raising their kids up to be truck drivers. We don't get as good a PR as we should, because they're great people doing hard work that our economy depends on, and we need more of them. And
let me ask about it. I said men truck drivers, because when I think about it, that's what I think about. What's the situation with women truck drivers?
We have a lot of women truck drivers. I think not as many as we'd like, but in our company's probably, you know, 10 to 15% range. Have a lot of husband-wife teams that make real good money. They drive. I've got a team that drives from L.A. to New York to Dalton, Georgia, the Helena, and back to L.A. every week. And, you know, they make well up into the triple figures. And there's a lot of those type opportunities out for husband-wife teams.
Interesting idea. I never would have thought of that.
Yeah, and you get to see the world while you're doing it. You're not stuck in whatever part of Montana you live in. We have some drivers that are three drivers. that do those routes, and one rotates out every week, so somebody has every third week off, and they like that too.
So if somebody's listening looking for that kind of work, what do they have to do?
Well, in Montana, Sage Schools in Billings has a very aggressive school. It, you know, I think the cost is around $5,000. It takes about 6 weeks of school. And then when you get out of school, a lot of trucking companies like ourselves have secondary training because you don't usually come out. So those companies will hire you, put you through 2 or 3 weeks of secondary training, maybe driving with another driver, and then you're off and working. So the beautiful thing about it is it doesn't take you that long, and it's not near as expensive as a year in college, and you can be working and getting a good paycheck pretty quickly.
Are there any educational requirements, formal or informal, a high school degree? Or
you know, you got to get a CDL, so you got to study the driving requirements.
CDL?
CDL is a license.
Okay.
You know, so you got to be able to pass that test, and that requires a lot of studying in that. Mm-hmm. Got to be able to read. You know,
yep.
if you're don't speak English and don't read English, you're going to have a hard time seeing the signs in the highway to tell you where to go. So,
right.
But very minimal. You know, I think you need a good safety record. If you've got a bad driving record in your personal life, nobody's going to want to hire you. You need to be drug-free and alcohol-free to consider driving. If you're an alcoholic, got a drug habit, you know,
right.
We have to test for both alcohol and drugs on a regular basis. And if you can't pass a drug test, you can't be a truck driver, and I think society demands that.
One other question. I hadn't thought about it, but one of the articles that I read suggested that it was tough health-wise. You're sitting for long, long hours. You're concentrating. You're not moving, leading to long-term physical problems. Has the industry taken any concern about that or any steps?
Yeah, you know, we do a lot of things. We're testing for sleep apnea and treating sleep apnea. Schneider, that we as purchased us, has been testing for sleep apnea for years, and treating sleep apnea, it has a tremendous amount of health benefits. All kinds of things happen. Blood pressures goes down and diabetes goes down. A lot of things. If you have sleep apnea, you need to get it treated. But in addition to that, it's just about making the decision to live healthy, just like you and I. If we eat too much and don't exercise.
Yeah.
Drivers have plenty of time to exercise. You know, they can only drive so many hours a day if they choose to do it. Some choose to do it and others choose not to, just like us, and the benefits or lack of benefits follow.
Looking back at almost 40 years in that business with the impact and involvement you've had, how do you boil it down? How do you feel about it personally?
You know, when you build a business from nothing, living in Montana to 1,300 employees, when you build a business that delivers furniture to every house in America, which is what we do for e-commerce, and you're doing that from Helena, Montana. When you sell your company and you get to read a very positive write-up in the Wall Street Journal about why this was a good choice for Schneider to buy Watkins Shepherd Trucking, makes me pretty proud, actually.
There's a second Ray Koontz that I've become familiar with just around town. That's a guy that gets involved in community issues to a very unusual degree. I think you were a founding member, I may get the terminology wrong, of the Montana Health Co-op, for example. I remember I first heard about you because you used your trucks to promote social causes that you believed in by putting, I think, banners on the trucks. It's mobile advertising. What was that about? Refresh my recollection.
The ad that I think you're thinking about is the trafficking of young women and advertising to stop it. So it's just an awareness campaign that Attorney General Fox started, and we agreed to wrap some trailers for him.
And why the health care concern?
Health care has always been a big issue for me because so many Montanans can't afford it. So many people across the United States can't afford it. And a couple guys came up with the idea that we could start our own health co-op, and there's federal funding, and we got together and we started it, and you've probably heard about it. Almost all of them went broke, except for the Montana Health Co-op, and I don't think we'll ever go broke. We've got some great people running it, and we're insuring a lot of Montanans and Idahoans, and it's a big, important issue because people need health insurance. They need a way to get treatment, and unfortunately, we didn't have a lot of competition in Montana. We still don't. The Health Co-op gives Blue Cross competition. Blue Cross is a great company, but they need competition. If you get down to a monopolistic state in healthcare insurance, you're in trouble as a state. So by us interjecting a new insurance company, a new option, one that's owned by the people that buy their insurance instead of outside interest, it made a lot of sense to me. And so my company's insurance comes from Blue Cross still. I'm sure they probably aren't crazy about that, but the health co-op is there, and it's forcing Blue Cross to be a better company, hopefully.
I got to know your son, Matt, involved with the National Alliance for Mental Illness, had him on the show a couple of times. The first time we had him on the show involved the death of his stepbrother.
My stepson.
I gather you're involved heavily in that issue as well?
Yeah, I very passionate. I try to help raise money for NAMI every year, and with the focus on trying to prevent all these suicides we're getting, we're still averaging around 20 suicides a day with returning vets nationwide.
And so, and your stepson was a vet?
I think he was the first returning vet in Montana to lose his life to post-traumatic stress from Iraq.
I've followed the issue since then because he wrote a letter to the editor to the paper, and that's why I contacted him to do the show. And my sense is that he's had a major impact as an individual on this issue. You agree, you disagree?
Matt has worked with that for 10 years now, really ever since Chris committed suicide. And he's gotten a national bill passed that makes it mandatory that every returning vet gets a psychological exam every 6 months. He got $40 million approved to train trainers, and it's made a big difference. And you know what it's really done for Chris's family and ourselves, his mother, his real dad, and myself, and my kids, and his brother, is it's put a value on Chris's life. And that's a little hard maybe to put your hands around, but it motivated Matt to do something about it to try to prevent it. And so it wasn't a life wasted. It has a real value to it.
We've kind of interviewed two different guys, it seems. One, an innovator to make a business highly successful, highly efficient in a competitive industry. And the other guy, very socially concerned with the welfare of people you don't even know in the community. What's the center of that guy? What holds them together in one piece? Central values.
I think it all goes all the way back to my parents, who were Catholic, hardworking people that believed in that also and did a lot of good and inspired for us to get educated. And as you go through life, you realize that you need to give back, that happiness doesn't come just from making money and building things. It comes from doing what you can do to help other people, and kind of like the old Good Samaritan story in the Bible where 10 people walk past but one stopped to help. I always say this, you can't help everyone. We've got a world that is so hurting with people needing help. But you can help one person at a time, maybe two at a time. But if you take that step and choose to help that one or two at a time, you change the world.
Ray Kuntz, I very much regret to say we're out of time. I want to thank you so much for being with us on Home Ground. And to our listeners, many thanks for being with us. We hope you'll join us next week. Home Ground is an independent production of Artemis Common Ground and does not necessarily reflect the views of this radio station. Post-production by Valtron Recording Studios. We welcome your ideas for new programs at www.homegroundradio.org. Home Ground is made possible by grants from the Liz Claiborne Art Ortenberg Foundation, Cinnabar Foundation, Humanities Montana, and the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication about issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans.